It is great to see all of you guys, and thank you for having me tonight. My name is Mike, for those of you who may not attend here regularly, or you come to Overflow, or whatever that might be. I'm really, really glad to be here. I love what you guys do. I love being a part of it as often as I can. I'm so grateful for Clay and all of his team for putting this on every week, and you guys are getting ready to kind of wrap up this semester, I believe, next week, and I've been invited to come and help kind of bring a close to this this segment now, or this section. Now, one of the things that's happening, and I know a lot of you guys, or several of you guys, are seniors, you're graduating, and you are standing on kind of the cusp of what is to be all the potential that you've been working for the last 18, 22, 24, 26, for some of you, years. Waiting to enter into adulthood, right? That's what you've been dreaming about your whole life, and now here you are. And so I want to talk about this idea of what it looks like for you to take where you are and really embrace the future, as opposed to what's happening to most of us and trying to avoid it. I've been married, fortunately, I'll kind of introduce you to some of my family as we talk tonight. I've been married 26 years. That's good. You can clap for that. It's more for Julie than it's for me. My wife, Julie, she's back in the back. We've married 26 years. We've known each other since second grade. So there's not a lot of secrets in our marriage. It's hard to impress someone when they've known you since second grade because they know everything about you, all your awkward middle school years and all that. Married 26 years. And it stands to reason that at 26 years of marriage, it looks very different than it did when we were married year one and year two. You can kind of figure it out, right? You get married and you think that this is what marriage is going to be like, and then over the course of time, it changes so much. And the reality is in those first 2 years, you have no idea what year five is going to be like, what year 10 is going to be like, what year 15 is going to be like, what year 20 is going to be like. You have no idea. And the idea, what you have to do is to realize that you're stepping into places that you don't know, have any idea how they're going to turn out or what it's going to be like, and you actually don't have the capacity to figure it out. For a lot of you, this is what your lives are obsessed with, trying to figure out how things are going to be. And you're paralyzed because you can't. And there's some things you're not going to know how they're going to turn out, and you actually don't have the capacity to figure that out before you get into the process. I want to talk to you tonight about what God does and how he meets you and what he's given to you in order to allow you to live into that future. I have two daughters. I have a youngest, my youngest daughter's 17. She is a senior in high school, and my oldest daughter is 23. She's a teacher, Spanish teacher. She's married to Carson. I don't know if Carson's in the room. Is he still back there? So Carson's back there. Y'all, this is Carson. He runs sound. He does a host of other things. Hey, Carson. Carson's my son-in-law. Now, Carson, I've known him since he was about 14 years old. And Carson, as long as I've known him, has wanted to be president of the United States. I guess I can say that, right? I know you're kind of wrestling things out, but he's wanted to be president. And it's kind of interesting because everybody, you know, says things, they want to be things. But when Carson was like 11 or I think 14 years old, when he first came into the church, he said he was going to work here and kind of decided that. And everything that he's decided to do from a very early age, he's done. So I'm not writing this off. And so part of Carson's preparation for being president is he's watched The West Wing. I don't know if y'all seen The West Wing or not. It's his favorite show on Netflix. He's watched, I believe, 10 times every season, the entire beginning to end, 10 times with one exception. He has never seen the last episode. He's watched this 10 times, the whole entire series of West Wing, and he's never seen the last one. I was asking, I said, Carson, why don't you do this? He said, well, when I'm on my deathbed, I want y'all to gather around. We're going to put on the last episode of West Wing, and we'll watch it together, and then he can die in peace knowing how the whole thing ends. So I was joking with him a couple weeks ago. I said, why don't you just watch the last episode? Because I just don't want it to be over. And for a lot of us, that's how we live our lives, right? We figure out there are things in our lives we don't want them to end, and so we just don't finish them. We just leave them sort of open-ended, hoping that they'll take care of themselves, and they don't. That's why some of you go to grad school, and why you're still in school, because you didn't want to graduate, so you just kept on and kept on and kept on. And there's an idea, there's something that happens to us. We get afraid, we become afraid of the future because of what we're holding on to. We don't want things to end or to finish. I was thinking about this. When we enter into this world as little kids, whatever it might be, we have all these potential and dreams and aspirations and hopes, and we'll give them a little smile there, I guess. And we have these aspirations, and give them some hair. And then as elementary school moves on, we get on into things, you get to be like, everything seems to be forward. Everything seems to be forward. You're looking forward to getting out of elementary school because fifth grade is so boring. You're looking forward to, can y'all still see me? I know, like, with the camo, it's kind of hard. Nothing says overflow like camo, right? And so everything is looking forward to you. You count down the days until you're 16 and you can drive. Then you count down the days until you're out of high school and you get to college and all these things. Everything is sort of anticipating and moving forward. And then you get to college. You get to sort of where you are right now and you become who you are. You're starting to figure yourself out, or at least you think you're starting to figure yourself out. And you're at this point, right here in this point in time. And all of a sudden, you look into the future, and it's something else. You're not really sure what it's going to be like. Everything has been looking forward to this. And what you're told, in fact, is people tell you in all their graduation speeches when you're getting to high school, these are the best 4 years of your lives. I'll tell you, if high school is the best 4 years of your life is going to be terrible. If college is the best 4 years of your lives, you got a long downhill slide after that, unless you die really young. What you need to understand is you have to have some kind of vision for the future that's going to allow you to be somewhere, to do the things that God has asked you to do. The reason I think that our mission here at Port City Church is so important, to reach people and to help them walk with God. It's not just that people will fill our seats and attend our church. It's because your relationship with Christ is the fuel for your life. What I believe is that you will not find meaning and purpose apart from your relationship with God. You've been made by Him and you've been made for Him. There is no meaning outside of that. It is the fuel for your life, but it is also the fuel for God's work in this world. It's the way His work gets done is through you and through me. The oldest promises in the Bible aren't about your life working well. They're about God using His people to bless the entire world, to bless the nations, that your life has meaning in the lives of other people. There's a purpose to it. There's a point to it. We've got to begin to understand, how do we take hold of this? How do we possess this? How do we walk in this? And that's what I want us to look at. How do we do this so that everything has been anticipating up to this point? When you talk to people about, are you ready to go to college? Say, yeah, I'm ready to go to college. When you talk to people about being ready to graduate from college, they're ready to graduate from college only because they're tired of being in college, not so much of what exists in the future. Then you got to get a job and you got to be responsible and you got to do the adult thing and all that kind of stuff. And it makes it very, very difficult for you to have any kind of vision for what it is that God wants you to do. So what I want to do is we kind of jump in. We're going to be looking in Joshua chapter 3. If you have your Bibles or your phones, you can look at Joshua chapter 3. Some of this is going to be on the screen. But I'm going to walk you through these couple of chapters and give you a couple of principles that I think will be helpful. At least I hope they'll be helpful to you tonight. Before I do that, I want to give you a couple of assumptions. These are things that I assume about you. You're all 18 to 24-ish, somewhere in there. And what I assume is that you understand that from the very foundation, what you've been given is you have been given a sense of authority. That's the first order that God establishes when He creates us. He says that I want for you to exercise dominion over what I've created. That every single one of you, as you entered into this world through your parents, everything has been about getting you to take responsibility, to exercise some kind of authority over things. You have authority. And your first line of authority, and I believe this because I don't want to get too far down this rabbit trail, but part of what has happened in our culture is that the family was designed to be the foundation of authority. The way in which moms and dads relate to each other and then the family is designed, and I can sort of back this up and show you why I believe this, but it was given as the foundation of authority. That has been fundamentally eroded in our culture. So basically, authority is just based on whatever we feel like, whoever has clout or influence with us. But I want to back away from that and just let you know, remind you that you have been given authority, and your first line of authority you've been given is over your own body and over your own mind. That's the language of the scriptures, what Jesus talks to us about. He talks to us about things like to possess our bodies, to exercise authority over them, to take thoughts captive, to exercise authority over them. We are not at the mercy of all the things that we want or think or feel. The first line of authority in your life, the way you're going to learn how to steward authority in your life, is first found in your body, in your own little realm here, how you control what happens between your ears and behind your eyes, what you do with your hands and your feet and your eyes and your minds and your tongue. It's exercising authority over those things. I assume that you know that. I assume that you understand that you have responsibility for how you use your body. you know, for how, and then we could do a whole other talk on that. So the two areas of responsibility I want to remind you of is, number one is you have the responsibility of your own integrity. You are responsible for your own integrity. You assume responsibility for your own integrity. It's nobody else's fault who you've become. Okay, things have happened to you, sure. You've been brokenhearted. You had a bad deal growing up. Maybe something happened with your parents. Maybe a lot of things have happened to you. But ultimately, you are responsible for your integrity. You're responsible for who you are becoming. You have a choice in that, a say in that. And all these things are going to kind of build, because you're going to have to move into this world at some point in time, being who you are. One of the things that I found that most people that I talk to, and I talk to a lot of adults, it's why I think this is such an important venue and an important kind of voice in our college students while you're here. Most people do not know who they are. I deal with people all the time who do not know who they are. They're still trying to be somebody else. They're still trying to find themselves, to know who you are, to understand who you've been created and made to be. You are responsible for your own integrity. Number two is you're responsible. You assume responsibility for your influence. And the reality is, everybody affects somebody. Every single person in here, you have an effect on other people. There's a sign in the Causeway Cafe. It says, everybody who enters these doors makes us glad. Some when they come and some when they leave. Right? Everybody has an impact on somebody. There are people that you know that you love to be around. And there are people that you know that you feel better when they're gone. You are responsible for your influence. You have to pay attention to how it is that people respond to you and how you interact with other people. You have to learn those skills. It's an important thing for you to understand as you start to move into adulthood, as you bring this season of your life to a close. And ultimately, it will come to a close. You're going to have to move into something else. I want you to assume those two things, at least. That you rest on the edge of something new and something unknown and something that is going to be fundamentally different than what you've experienced the first 18, 20, 22, 24 years of your life. Fundamentally different. And everything in you is going to want to recreate what it's always been. Want to recreate what it's always been. You know people like this. You've seen people who are hanging on to the glory days of high school, and they still have their mullets, and they still wish for their 76 Camaros and all these things, and those days are long, regrettably, they're long gone. And what God has given us is this way in which we walk, which is called faith, which by its very definition requires uncertainty. It requires uncertainty, but it also requires something else. It requires movement. A lot of folks in your generation are coming in, you want experiences that make you feel faithful. You come in and you sing songs. It may look like I'm surrounded by you, right? This is how I fight my battles. That's really good when you're sitting in this room. And what you'll want to do is you'll want to stay right there. You'll want to stay there. But God always calls us to move. I remember I was teaching my daughters to ride their bikes. I wanted them to ride bikes when they were really small, so I taught them to ride bikes. And it's really interesting that when you start to think about this, most of us ride bikes, we take it completely for granted. But it's the most bizarre thing to teach a four-year-old that she's going to actually be stable on two wheels. Because you put them on the bike, and they're like, oh my gosh, Dad, I'm going to fall. I'm like, no, you're not going to fall. Dad, look at this. If I pick my feet up, shoom, right, I'm going to fall. It's like, no, you don't pick your feet up, you move. They're like, you what? You mean you want me to fall going fast? It's like, no, that's how it works. I begin to explain to them, like, you're four. Like, I studied architecture and civil engineering. I'm like, no, there's a thing. It's called angular momentum. And angular momentum does this, and it creates centripetal force. And centripetal force as it, and I'm telling this four-year-old, and they're looking at me like, Dad, doesn't make any sense. I don't understand what you're saying. And then you just give them a shove. And they begin to realize, oh my gosh, when you move, things actually stabilize. You see, this is how faith works. In your life, what a lot of us do, we get afraid, we don't understand, we get paralyzed, we sort of stay, so we want to just hold everything just like it is. We want to, I don't want to see the end, I don't want to bring this to a closure, because then it might be over. What I want to tell you is learning how to finish things is an extremely important skill in order for you to find and do and fulfill what it is that God has asked you to do with tremendous joy and tremendous hopefulness throughout your life. A lot of you, this is one of the things that will happen, is in, especially in the world we look around, all the news and all the stuff that just gives us so much cause to be disappointed, to be fearful, to be afraid. There's no jobs, the economy, or this, or politics, and all the other stuff that goes into that. You're standing on the edge of something. You're going to need some faith and some guts and some courage to move into that. So this is what I want you to do. This is what I want to remind you of. I'll give you a couple of things tonight from my friend Joshua, found in his book in the Old Testament. It's at the very kind of the very front of your Bibles. And it's in the Old Testament, the book of Joshua. Joshua is the he's the successor of Moses. Moses had led the people out of Egypt. He was promised that he was going to lead them into the promised land, but he did something and forsook that responsibility, and God gave that responsibility to Joshua. And this is the story where Joshua is about to lead them in to the promised land. In Joshua chapter 3, and it says this. So they're all gathered, and they're camping out in the wilderness about to move into the promised land. And it says, after 3 days, they went throughout the camp giving orders to the people. And this is what he says. When you see the Ark of the Covenant, and this was the symbol for God's presence. When you see the Ark of the Covenant, I want you to move from your positions, and I want you to follow it. This is symbolic for the presence of God. It's where God's presence dwelt. The Ark is going to go out. And he says, I want you to follow this. And this is what he says. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. Since you have never been this way before, there's going to be things that are fundamentally different as you move forward. Since you have never been this way before. A lot of us, we get frustrated because we move into things and this is not how I thought it was going to be. Of course, it's not how you thought it was going to be because you've never been that way before. You've never been that way before. That's what he's saying. But I want you to follow this and follow a distance. And here's what it says in verse 5. This is what Joshua tells the people. He says this, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things for you. Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things in you. To consecrate yourselves. I want for you to begin to prepare yourself to leave the season that you're in. To consecrate means we're going to close one thing and start something else. We're going to set ourselves apart to see something with fresh eyes, to prepare to close something, but also to prepare to begin something new. This happens in relationships. This happens with finances. This happens with jobs. This happens with colleges. This happens with majors. So if you pick 15 majors because you can't figure out what you want to do and you're so afraid you're going to miss out, you're just picking this and you're picking that and you're just haunted all the time. Maybe I've done the wrong thing. And he says, you got to consecrate yourself. You got to prepare yourself. There's some work that you and I have to do in order to move into things. It's interesting because when we think about this, what we usually pray for is, God, show me your will. And what we mean by that is, God, show me what you're going to do, right? What you're going to do in order to open some window or some door, create some perfectly placed path for me to walk in. God, if you want me to major in this, give me this thing that happens. Send me a letter in the mail or whatever it is. And those are good prayers, but that's often not how God works. He goes on, and what basically happens is, as God's telling Joshua to lead the people out, he says, I want you to get the priest. And we're going to cross the Jordan River because the Jordan River was up at flood stage. It was pretty wide. I had to get across. It was actually one of the lowest, fastest flowing rivers in that part of the world. It was very dangerous to cross that river, to try to ford that river during that time. And so God says he's going to deliver his people across the Jordan River. He'd already delivered them through the Red Sea a generation ago, and now he's going to deliver them through the Jordan River. And what he tells them is, I want you to get the priest. I want the priest to go put the ark on their shoulder, and then I want the priest to walk into the water. And then once they're into the water is going to part. And this is what it says at the end of that passage. It says, as soon, in verse 13, as soon as the priests carry the ark, I think that'll be up there, as soon as the priest who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth, as soon as they set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and it will stand up in a heap. They're not going to stand up while they're standing on the edge praying about it. It's going to stand up. The waters are going to stop once they walk into the water. This is how faith works, y'all. This is how faith works. I remember when we were starting Port City Church, one of the things that we were told, and I'll just kind of share you some backstory. People walk into this building and you come to Overflow, you're like, oh, it's always been like this. It hasn't always been like this. This was one fearful journey on top of another. It is only 20 years in that we stand here able to talk about this like this. For years and years, we talked about this being gut wrench. And what gut wrench is where you want to throw up every single day because you're not sure if it's going to work. That went on for years around here. We were in mobile offices in middle schools. We were in high schools. We were all over the place trying to just make things work. Our feet were in the water. We were dependent on God to stack the waters up to clear the path as we walked through. One of the things that happened is I remember wrestling with this. I don't have time for that. So basically, what I'm telling you is you're going to sit there and you're going to wait for all of the ducks to line up in a row before you move, and that's not how he works. My question for you, my challenge for you is, you know that there are things that God is asking you to do. Maybe it's things that have to do with your integrity, your influence. Maybe it is those kind of things. Maybe it's stuff about your future. And you keep waiting for the right job or the right this or the right that to work out, and then you'll know what to do. And he's asking you simply to follow him. He's asking you to trust him. Your faith is not designed to make your life work, which is what a lot of us end up believing. We think that somehow that if I believe in God enough, he'll make my life turn out exactly like I want it to. That's not the purpose of your faith. We're going to look at that more in just a minute. It goes on and it says this. And once he gets this idea, they're set foot in there at the very end. At once the whole nation across, look at this in chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. And this is where I want to focus some. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, so that these priests go in, they're wet, the water backs up, and then it creates a path, and all the people cross, and the priests are still in the river. And look at what it says. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said, I want you to choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to go take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you are staying tonight. I love this passage. I love this story because it's not only did they step out in faith, they stepped out in faith, this miraculous thing happened, they go all the way through. And God says, now I want you to go back and I want you to grab 12 rocks out of the middle of the river and I want you to bring them out on the other side with you and I want you to set up an altar. Now, why would he do that, right? Why would he do that? He's doing that because he wants us to process what it is that he has done. Part of the thing I want to remind you is it says after they had finished, after they had already crossed, after the work had been completed, what a lot of us do is we panic in the middle. We get in the middle, we start, I got to get the stones now, I got to figure out how to do this now, I got to get all this together now, I got to understand this now. And it's only on the other side that you get to do this. It's on the other side of the struggles, on the other side of these moments that you have in your life that this gets to be reality. You stop, you go back into where God worked, you grab some rocks, some mementos, some things, you bring them out and then you remind yourself of them. You can process things in the middle, but you've got to debrief them at the end. Whether it's a relationship, whether, I mean, it's there's so many examples of how this needs to play out or should play out in your life. And what I wrote down is kind of three principles for this. Number one, whenever you're sort of wrestling with decisions or what God's doing, the first thing is you have to follow. That's number one. You have to follow him. You have to sense and see what God is doing, what he is asking you to do in these moments. And this is not a how-to book. It just doesn't work that way. So if you're looking for the perfect verse, I wanted to be an architect all my life. There are verses where it talks about architecture, but none of those were like verses that spoke directly to my heart about what I was supposed to do. I did not know what I was supposed to do. People said, Mike, how did you know you're supposed to be in the ministry? How did you know you're supposed to start a church? How did you know you're supposed to do all these things? The answer is you don't. I didn't know. It was something that was wrestling inside of me. You have to follow what God is asking you to do. This requires you to have a relationship with him. This requires you to be submissive to him. I'm going to talk to you about that in just a minute. Number two, it requires follow through. It requires follow through. For me, this happened when I was about my sophomore year in college. I was studying architecture. Architecture is a hard degree. You go a long time without any sleep and you have to draw. It was fun because you got to use colored pencils instead of everything else, but it was a lot of fun. But it was a long, arduous journey. And what I began to realize when I was a sophomore in college is I was probably going to end up working for a church even though I didn't want to. So I said, okay, God, if I'm going to be in the ministry and that's where you want me to be, then it only makes sense that there's no reason for me to spend an extra year in college when I can be out and doing what you want me to do. Right? It just makes sense that way. Why would I major in architecture, which takes 5 years, when I can major in computer science and get out in 3.5 years? This only makes sense. So everything inside of me wanted to sort of switch gears midstream. Some of you, that's what you do. As soon as you get an inkling of what God wants you to do, you're off in a different direction, trying to figure out what it is he's asking you to do. To follow through, I had to really stop and say, God, what do you want me to do in this? What I kept sensing, and I wish I could tell you there was some verse or magic, you know, rub the lamp in this pipe. None of that happened. It was just a sense. I would sit down with my journal. This is why I badger people all the time to keep a journal, because it helps you see what you think God is doing. It helps you see what you think God is doing. God, do you want me to be an architect? Do you want me to finish my degree in architecture? Or do you want me to do this, you know, quicker or faster or whatever? And I wrote this down. And what I believed, what I sensed was finish the degree in architecture. God can handle the extra year. He's good. The kingdom's not going to teeter because you don't get in a church a year sooner, a year later. It's safe in his hands to follow through. And then number three is to reflect, to build some kind of memorial or to stop and say, what did God do? I can tell you what God did through my education. I can tell you the relationships that I embraced that make a difference even in my life today. To see how there was encouragement in places where I desperately need it when no one wanted to. In fact, when I finished my degree in architecture, it only made me want to be an architect more. It only made me want to be an architect more. In fact, when I got out of college, I got a fantastic job working in architecture. I had the best of both worlds. I was volunteering as a youth minister in my church, right? I was volunteer, so I didn't cost the church any money. I volunteered, had a youth group, about 20 or 30 kids, and I was working in architecture. I'm like, God, how much better can this get? How much better? I mean, I was the youngest deacon in my church. I was ordained as a deacon in our church at 21 years old. Everybody in my church is like, Mike, you're doing what God wants you to do. I'd go in my office every morning and open my Bible to do my quiet time, and all I hear was, Mike, you're not doing what I'm asking you to do. I'm like, no, God, you don't understand. Like, I'm like a volunteer youth minister, and this is, like, I'm doing your work. He's like, I'm not worried about you doing my work. I'm worried about what I'm doing in you. I'm concerned about what I'm doing in you. And I began to reflect, and it took a whole lot of sort of gut wrench to start to think and figure out what it is that God is doing in my life. And then you start to reflect, and you begin to put these places. I wrote these things down. God, I'm going to surrender. I went home, quit. I was going to quit my job. I ended up at a youth camp with my youth group that I was volunteering with. The youth group, the camp speaker was a pastor from Wilmington, North Carolina, who did not have a youth ministry at his church. Ended up interviewing and moved to Wilmington 25, 26 years ago to move to Wilmington to be a youth minister. I quit my job and my wife and I moved up here, and that was how I got up here. And I tell you that to say, not that that's what you should do. I tell you that to say that there was a lot of wrestling and wrangling and uncertainty in that process. But it was only by stopping and thinking and reflecting and saying, God, what were you doing all along the way? I can tell you there are a couple things. He was teaching me to trust him and his leadings and his promptings. He was teaching me to trust me that I could trust him. I want to explain that. Because there are two things that I think that happen to us when it comes to this and reason the people don't do this. Number one, and I guess maybe one other thing to say here, your future is out here somewhere where you're going to be. There's all these places along the way that are critical for you to get there. And what you're always trying to do is to figure out how these things connect together. And sometimes it's this way, and it's like this, and it's all different routes that we get to our future. But what you have to begin to see is how is it that you process all these moments and what's happening in them as you process them. And sometimes what you have to do is you have to create endpoints because it's not going to be, marriage isn't the endpoint of your relationship. Graduation isn't the endpoint of your college career. There are semester breaks. Sometimes in a relationship, you need to take a break in your relationship to figure out where you are and what God's doing. It doesn't mean you have to break up and hate them and move on with your life. It just means you got to create some endpoints so you can figure out what is going on. What is God doing? You got to create these so you can consecrate yourself, set yourself apart. And then this is the thing that I think happens to most of us. As soon as we make a decision about something, immediately you start second guessing it. It's what I call the plague. There are two things that kill us. Number one is the plague of second guessing. And this is where you change your major to communications. Oh, I know, I'm gonna change my major. You go, you change your major. And as soon as you change your major, you start going, I wonder if I made the wrong decision. And then you go two semesters in that one, and it just won't leave you alone. And so you change it again, and you're always second guessing yourself. You're always doing this. You're always doing this. I'll tell you, this happened to me at a really bad church experience when I was here. Really bad. It was probably the worst 3 years of my life. And I wanted nothing more than to get the heck out of Wilmington. I interviewed at a church in Florida. So I got on a plane, flew to Florida. They interviewed me. They were like, Mike, we want you to come. It was so cool. This is like back in the way in the youth group days. They had like your own coffee bar. They had your own, we had our own sound system. We had our own budget. They were going to pay for me to go back to school. Their salary was way more. It was like all these things were so much better than my current situation here. I remember thinking, man, I am going. I'm going to get out of Wilmington. I'm going to get to make a new start. All this stuff is going to be behind me. I can be just done with this. And so I go down. Interview, they offer me the job. I come back, or they say we're interested. They start talking about a job offer. They say, we want you to give us your answer in a week. So what I did was I came back home and I called my youth minister. His name is Bill Hughes. Bill is the oldest youth minister in America, I'm pretty sure. He's 65 years old. He's certainly the oldest and probably the most uncool youth pastor in the country. He has made a profound difference in my life. When I was interviewing at Chick-fil-A in their architecture department, because when I was kind of doing my wrestling thing, the volunteer youth minister thing wasn't working, the architecture thing, I had an opportunity to interview at the Chick-fil-A corporate headquarters. I thought, how much more Christian do you get than Chick-fil-A? And so I interviewed there. So I called Bill to ask him about, hey, man, I'm interviewing at Chick-fil-A. He says, oh, I hope you get the job. I said, really? He said, yeah, I hope you get the job so you'll turn it down. He says, you'll have to make a decision. It won't just be open doors. You'll have to decide which doors you're actually going to walk through. And that's how he was with me. So I called him up and said, Bill, I got this chance to move to Florida. I got this chance. Here's all these opportunities. I'm going to pay for school. A lot of potential for where I could be in my career as a youth minister. This is just a great opportunity. And he said, Mike, I want you to make a list of all the pros and cons. I said, Bill, I've done that. I want you to make a list of all the pros. I said, Bill, I've done that. He said, then I want you to just simply ask God, what do you want me to do? And I said, okay, I've done that. And he said, Mike, and then here's the most important thing. Once you make that decision, do not second guess it. I said, okay. So this is about a year and a half into the chaos at the church that I was in. I interviewed down there. My list of pros to why I should leave, no lie. I've got a pink sheet of paper in my office in my journal that has this list on it. More money, opportunity to go to school, fresh start. I mean, the list is probably 10 or 15 things on that list. I wrote them down. These are reasons why I should leave Wilmington and move to Florida. The reasons to stay. The only thing that I wrote on that side of the page was, I'm not sure if God has finished with me in Wilmington. The only thing on that side of the page is, I'm not sure if God is finished with me in Wilmington. I'm 27 years old. This is 2.5 years before Porch City was even, a thing. I'm not sure if God is finished with me in Wilmington. So Saturday, I'm supposed to give him an answer, Dr. Kitchens. I'm supposed to give him an answer about whether or not I'm coming to Florida. So what I did was, this is really spiritual. I thought, how am I going to know that I'm not supposed to go to Florida? I kind of made up my mind. I kind of figured I was supposed to be in Wilmington. I'm not really sure. So what I did on Saturday morning, I said, I'm just going to pretend on Friday that I accepted the job and see how it feels. So I woke up Friday morning, and the only way I knew to do this was to stand in the mirror and to pretend like I was answering the phone. Hey, this is Mike Ashcraft, First Baptist, Braden in Florida. This is Mike, I'm the youth minister. And just try to pretend. Does that sound right? Does that feel right? Is it, that look in the mirror, to see this happening? And it's like, no. This went on, and that's how spiritual it was. I'm praying, God, is this right? And it's like, it just kind of this gnawing sense of, no, it's not right. So that night I called up Dr. Kitchens. I said, Dr. Kitchens, it's Mike. He said, oh, Mike, we're so excited to hear from you. I said, well, Dr. Kitchens, I'm not going to come. He said, why not? Is it money? Is it school? I said, no, it's none of those things. I said, I just don't think that it's God's will for me to come. And he said, okay, and he hung up the phone. And now you would think, right, after I turned this down, that things would turn around and be great. It set up the next 18 months to be worse than the first 18 months. And I'll tell you, one thing I never, ever, 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 ever did, as mad and as frustrated as I got in my current situation, I never said, should have gone to Florida. Do you know what that did? It opened up my heart and it opened me up to learn and to see some things that I could only see as I stayed in the struggle. That if I would have always been second guessing, I would have never, ever, ever seen those things. For some of you, you're chronic second guessers. You second guess everything. What you need to learn is the discipline of acceptance. The discipline of acceptance. You want to ruin something special? Just compare it to something else, right? Go on a date with this girl. You're like, oh, man. And then just look at all the other girls that you're not with and see how that feels. That's what we do, right? To accept some things. To accept, this is who I'm with. You have to do this in marriage, right? You realize when you get married to one person, you are saying no to 3.5 billion other people. You're saying no. The odds of one of them being a better fit or your soulmate might be really, really high, but you're stuck with this one person. And the quicker you accept that and understand it, the more likely you're going to be able to live within that. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that you should never be assertive or aggressive or want more. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying for a lot of you, your problem isn't that you're aggressive or assertive. Your problem is you don't accept who you are. You keep trying to think if you were better, if you were more this or prettier, or more popular, or more this or more skilled, and you've just not bought into who God has created you to be. Do you know how much pressure comes when you start a church? Do you know how much pressure there is being a pastor of a church in the internet age when everybody compares you to everybody else who's popular and cool and hip? I mean, this is as good as I get. I got on camera tonight. That's a big stretch for me. I have no tattoos, right? My hair has been like this since I was 33 years old. I'm as stuck as they get. And everybody always compares you to everybody else. Do you know how easy it is to buy into that? Do you know what I have to do? I have to stop and say, God, this is who you have called me to be. These are the gifts that you have given me. Am I responsible to leverage them and to work on them and to get better? Yes, 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 yes. But I cannot fall into the trap of trying to be somebody else. And neither can you. And neither can you. The places and the things that God has asked you to do. I can't tell you why God chose me to be the pastor at this church. I don't know that. All I know is he asked me to do it. I stepped into it. I've got to do what God has asked me to do. And so do you. I don't know why God has given you the gifts he's given you, the skills he's given you, or given you the difficult paths that he's given you. I don't know why he's done those things, but I'll tell you what, he does. And if you walk with him and you listen to him and you seek after him, he will use those things in your life if you will just stop second guessing and going, well, if I were this, or if this had happened this way, or if this had happened that way, then I wouldn't be where I am. You're right, you wouldn't be where you are. But God uses all of those things. So that's discipline number one, the discipline of acceptance. You know what I'm talking about, right? I think you're getting this. The second plague that kills us when it comes to this is this idea of chronic, this is plague number one, is this idea of chronic calculation. And you're always trying to figure out how things are going to work out. Interestingly enough, once the folks went through the Jordan River, they're going to take on the promised land. They're sitting there counting how many armies they have, how many weapons they have, how many this, and like, oh, we're going to go take this whole town. We're going to take Jericho. Here we go, yeah. And God says, oh, here's what I want you to do. I don't want you to put the guys with the weapons in the front. I want you to put the priests with the horns in the front. And I want you to march around Jericho seven times. And the seventh time, I want you to blow the trumpets. That makes no sense whatsoever. My point is this. You're sitting there trying to figure out how you're going to get to where God wants you to be to do what God wants you to do, how you can get out of college faster, how you can get into this job faster, how you can get this relationship faster. How are you going to get me to be married if this person right here ain't going to ever ask me? And so you're like all the time like, oh, man, it's always this chaos because you're always trying to calculate, how is this going to work out? God, how are you going to do this if I'm still single? I don't even have a date. You're always worried about these things, trying to calculate as to how are you going to get to where God wants you to be. Y'all, I wrestle with this. Most of my years when I was your age, I was super ambitious, super aggressive when I was in college. One of the things that I did when I was about 22 years old, I wrote out a 20-year plan. Actually, I was about 20 years old. I wrote out a 20-year plan. When I was 40 years old, I wanted to be living on the beach. I wanted to be an architect designing houses, and I wanted to be left alone. That was kind of my big vision. I don't know if you've ever had those visions or not. I wanted to have enough money to do what I wanted to do. I wanted to be out of grad school. I wanted to have a successful architecture practice. I wanted to be designing beautiful homes on the beach and living in one of them. That's what I wanted to do. Say, God, here's what I wanted. Someone told me, write your goals down. So I did it. I wrote them down. And you know what happens when you start writing them down? You start calculating, especially if you're walking with God. You're trying to figure out how God's going to do this to make this happen as well. And some of you are doing that. You're trying to figure out if it's the right major, if it's the right person, if it's the right this, if it's the right that, if this is the right school for you. And you're always calculating, trying to figure out, how's God going to pull this off? I mentioned this Sunday. It's one of my life principles. Just because you can't figure out how God's going to do something has zero capacity on his ability to do it. God does stuff without consulting me or you all the time. He's not waiting on us to figure anything out. He does stuff. He can be trusted with that. So the discipline here, you need the discipline of acceptance. And here, you need the discipline of surrender. You know what I would tell you to do? And I'm not joking. Write down what you want God to do. Write it down. Write it as vivid, as fun as you can imagine. God, I want this house. I want to live on this beach. I want to be designing houses like this. I want this much money in the bank. God, these are all the things that I want. If you would do that for me, I would be stoked. Write it down. Write down what kind of husband you want, what kind of wife you want, how many kids you want. Write all of it down. Then you sit down at a coffee shop or at your table and you write down and say, God, here's my strategic plan. And you say, but whatever you want, I'll do. And you just hand it to him. Just hand it to him. You know, it's so funny. I look back on my life and all the things that I was so afraid that I was going to lose if I did what God wanted me to do, if I followed Christ. All those things I was so afraid of giving up. He has more than replaced in my life in ways that I absolutely could not have imagined. And I'll tell you this with as much certainty as I can say anything else. God has been so unbelievable, and not perfectly. This is not like blessings or prosperity or none of that. This is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something in here. The faithfulness that God has towards me, I have zero reservations about moving into the future with him. None. And the same thing can be true for you. As you learn how to accept what it is that he's asked you to do, he's not asking you to be anybody other than you. He's not asking you to do anything other than what he's asking you to do. He's not asking you to compare yourself with everybody else who's doing everything that you want to do. He's not asking any of that. He's just asking you to follow him. So the way this whole thing concludes, and I love this, I want to read this to you. I think I'm there. In Joshua 4, it says this. He tells them to pick up these stones and put them in this place. And in verse 21 of chapter 4, look at what he says. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? I want you to tell them that God was faithful. See, what's really interesting, most of you are so interested in this future. And if I'm really honest, the future that you're talking about is probably about 8 years younger than I am. You're thinking when you're 40, when you're old and 40, what are you going to be like? He's going, oh, no, I want you to talk about the future over here. What's it going to be like in 70 years? What's it going to be like in 100 years? You want to talk about the future? Let's talk about the future. What are your children's children going to think about God? Oh, in the future, when people see what you did, what you wrote, what you thought, what you built, when people see your life, what are they going to say about me? See, it's really interesting. What God asks us, what he promises, is that he will give you life that becomes a blessing to other people. God's promise was that to the whole entire earth, this is like foundational. You don't ever hear this talked about. The whole promise was that that he would bless through his people, he would bless every nation on earth. That was his promise. And what you and I are most concerned about is, God, how is my faith going to make me good right here? Are you going to give me the right woman, the right man, the right job, the right money, the right this? Are you going to do those things for me? And we see faith as a means to an end. We see our faith as a way to get the life that we want, to make things work out for us. That's not what this is. Your faith is not a means to an end. God is not a means to an end. In fact, your life is actually a means to an end. Your life is actually a means to an end. It is a conduit for God's faithfulness and love so that you will find his life and others will find his blessing. And what will they say in 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years? We have lost the capacity to think long. I want for you, as you prepare to close a season in your life, to begin to look and say, oh, when your grandchildren ask you, when they ask you, what are you gonna say? I don't know if you're aware of this or not. I see this all the time. People are afraid to get married. They're afraid to change jobs. They're afraid to take this risk or do this thing or that thing because it's uncertain, because it's the future and we're just not sure how things are gonna turn out. I'll tell you, part of the thing that I wanna encourage you, and for some of you, the reason you second guess isn't because you didn't hear God or sense God, it's because you don't trust what you sensed about God. To me, one of the greatest lessons that I've learned in the discipline of not second guessing is to trust what God is saying to me is actually from him. I don't say that flippantly. You don't hear me walk around and go, the Lord told me this, the Lord told me that. I hear people tell me all that all the time. In fact, I got two phone calls in one day. One lady told me, she said, Mike, I got a prophecy from the Lord. You need to be more aggressive and you need to, you know, take hold of these things. And the very next message, I'm not exaggerating, the very next message on my machine told me that I needed to relax and let him do work. I'm like, which one is it? I'm not talking about playing games like that. I'm talking about you being with God and hearing from him, listening to him, knowing what he's saying to you way down deep in your guts. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a relationship. It's some choices you're making. It's some habits you're in. It's some fear you're dealing with. It's some anxiety. You know that God is speaking to you and he's whispering to you. And my question to you is, what is it? What is it that he's saying? So I'll leave you this. And I know that Kaylee and them are going to come out. They're going to lead us in another song as we close. I want to ask you two questions. What is it you need to accept? What is it that's finally going to stop you from comparing yourself to everybody else and everything else? What is it that's going to stop you from trying to meet all the expectations that everybody else has for you? What do you need to accept about what God has called you and created you to do and to be? And then number two is, what is it you need to surrender? God, there's nothing worse than holding on to something too long. Nothing worse. What is it you need to surrender? So I want to pray for us tonight, pray for you tonight. I'm so grateful to be here. I hope that your relationship will be fuel for your life. Your relationship with Christ will be fuel for your life. Because your relationship with Christ is fuel for his work. And there are people who are counting on you and on me to see what it is that God has intended them to be somewhere out in the future. I hope that you'll embrace it. Father, I just pray for this group of students tonight. I thank you for just their passion, for their heart, their desire, the excitement that you feel in this room. God, I also know that there's a lot of pressure. A lot of these guys feel tremendous pressure. Maybe it's from parents. Maybe it's from friends. Maybe it's just from their own sense of, I don't want to let anybody down, including you. God, may you free us from that. You've called us. You've created us. You have gifted us. You have promised us, Father, that you are faithful. I pray that as we wrestle tonight and declare these words, that we would just offer ourselves to you in this posture of acceptance, in this posture of surrender, for you to do whatever it is you want to do in our lives tonight for the sake of how you want to use our lives to bless others in the future.